Is smoking cool again? According to a recent New York Post article, it highlighted trends going back up in the wrong direction. And now doctors fear the renewed glamorization of cigarettes could signal even younger generations who never were interested in smoking to do so now. Joining us to talk more about this is Dr. Vinnie Mace with the Yale School of Medicine. Hey, Dr. Mace, how are you?
Hey, good morning. How are you, Melissa? Thanks for having me on.
I'm so glad to have you here, Dr. Mason. I took a very personal interest in this one because I would say in the last 10 or so years, I haven't really heard about cigarettes. To be honest, I've heard more about vaping. So this was kind of surprising to me because it's true. Gen Z really has shown no interest in cigarettes, but this new article is saying otherwise.
Yeah, no, it certainly is. The article by Carly Stern that you referenced is. And, the good news is that smoking in terms of actual rates isn't coming back. But culturally, yes, it's being normalized again in the media and in the movies.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of they focus a lot on Hollywood. But I guess I'm curious, Dr. Mace, if you feel like Hollywood still has the same effect on society as it did 30, 40 years ago. So my parents' generation, I mean, I can remember my mom talking about smoking on our way to high school. Sorry, Mom. But, you know, like that generation, the 70s, you know, that it was cool to smoke cigarettes. I felt like my generation, the millennials, we were so hyper-focused on, and at that time, there was more, I think, control over the cigarette industry and the DARE program, and, you know, don't just drink alcohol, don't smoke cigarettes, you know, don't try nicotine, all that. But I guess Hollywood didn't really drive if we wanted to smoke cigarettes when I was growing up in the 90s. And I'm curious if in 2026 you feel like Hollywood has that much of a hold on society to make cigarettes cool again.
No, I think that Hollywood still is an influencer, particularly for Gen Z, but it's different than before. It's not the main driver of culture. It's just one player in a bigger ecosystem, as you know, that's mostly dominated by the social media.
Right. I mean, so I'm glad that you brought up social media, Dr. Mace, because that's what I'm kind of thinking. I feel the bigger issue would be if you start to see influencers, for example, or podcasters using that as their advertisements for, you know, why they're able to fund their podcast, for example. I think Hollywood certainly matters. But if I see a person smoking a cigarette or, you know, my son sees a person smoking a cigarette on a movie or a TV show, it's not what would drive him to smoke a cigarette. I think it would either be something that's coming from an influencer, like a peer, or I guess like peer pressure, I guess.
No, I hear you. Gen Z certainly hasn't grown up just on movies and TV. They grow up on TikTok, YouTube, and creatives. And I guess the buzzword for those folks are cigfluencers, people that like have that impact and might get someone to try cigarettes. And over half of Gen Z say social media is more relevant than traditional TVs or movies. So I think you're right. It's a much bigger piece than just Hollywood alone.
So I think it leads to a great conversation of the impacts of cigarette smoking. It might have been a while. We got to dust off that book of, you know, what do things do to your human body if you decide to do it all the time? What is the impact of cigarette smoking consistently?
It causes, it certainly is impactful with regards to the cause of lung cancer as well as other cancers. You know, the article in the New York Post was interesting that you cited where it's, you know, for every cigarette you smoke, it could take potentially 19 minutes off your life. It leads to immunosystem changes. It causes the cilia in your airway to basically be paralyzed so it doesn't clear bacteria from your mucus of your lungs. Overall, it has a net negative impact and not just lung cancer, but is a leading cause of other cancers long-term if you're a long-term smoker.
I always was curious, Dr. Mace, how do some people who smoked for a long time, how do they develop lung cancer, for example, but others who smoke well into their 90s live to be over 100? Like, how does that work?
Well, the short answer, everyone who smokes getting damaged. Those who develop disease, they may not develop lung cancer, but can go on to develop diseases like COPD. And the folks that you talk about are that, you know, the one I famously remember is George Burns. He used to smoke cigars well into his 90s. It's a mix of biology, exposure, and just chance. genetics is really the biggest factor, and there are some people just by their genetic makeup are more susceptible because of variations in how their DNA repairs DNA damage, how they detoxify carcinogens, and how their body overall controls inflammation. For example, there's folks out there that have what's called an alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, and I've seen this in my practice, smokers that have that come in with severe lung damage or emphysema at early ages, as early as 19, 20, and 21.
And again, we have Dr. Vinnie Mace here from the Yale School of Medicine. In this New York Times or New York Post article, excuse me, it says the most recent data we have for smoking rates in the U.S. is for 2024. Good news, we have reached a historic low with just 9.9% of adults reporting a cigarette habit. Now, of course, we don't have 2025 or 26 numbers just yet. But again, historic low. Would you say, Dr. Mace, your bigger concern for nicotine would still be vaping for young people?
Yeah, right now, among U.S. high school students, 1 to 2% currently smoke cigarettes. It's a massive drop from the early 2000s, where 15 to 20% of high school students reported that they were smoking cigarettes, vaping. And now this is the real story. About 10% of high school students report current e-cigarette use. In the middle school, it's about 3 to 5%.
Wow.
Many use flavor products. I mean, my daughter, Ren, she's 12, and you know, sometimes she goes in the bathroom in middle school, and she thinks that there may be someone vaping. It's a prevalent thing that's out there in the community. It's 5 to 10 times more common than cigarette smoking currently.
Wow. And do you think, Dr. May, so take your daughter, Ren, for example, and thank you for sharing that. Do you think that there is an understanding of the impacts of vaping? And I ask that because my sister-in-law, who I remember, so she's out of college now, but when she was first entering college, everybody her freshman year vaped. And I remember seeing one picture of her. And of course, we're about, you know, about 10 years older than her, my husband and I. And I said, you know, am I overstepping if I tell her to stop doing this? Because I don't think she understands the long-term effects. And he said, no, you're not overstepping. I tell her, and she went back to her friends, of course. And they're like, nope, this isn't the same as cigarettes, all that. I mean, these are 18, 19-year-old kids. You know, I hate to use that term lightly, but they are. And so she continued. I mean, she doesn't do it anymore, thank God. But do you think that there's enough of education and understanding the impact of vaping?
No, based on what I've seen just in my practice and going out and talking to folks, I don't know if there's an understanding, because the marketing has been clever with regards to saying it's safer than cigarettes. But just because it's we don't have the long-term studies, what people don't understand is vaping is an aerosol delivery system. Cigarettes work by burning tobacco, and the combustion rate at the level of a cigarette is about 600 to 900 degrees. And you get, when people smoke, they get tar, carbon monoxide, and about 7,000 other chemicals. Vaping is a delivery system for nicotine, but it's a heating liquid. It's not burning it. So it works at a lower temperature, 200 to 300 degrees, and it produces aerosol fine particles. So it delivers nicotine and fewer chemicals, but still harmful chemicals. They're ultra-fine particles that go deep into the lungs, flavoring chemicals, metals from the coil. It's essentially like inhaling heated chemical mist. And I think, to your point, what the marketing has done well, I'm going to say, as an alternative to cigarettes, saying it's safer, but there's not a deep understanding about how vaping works and what it does. And when I have those conversations with patients that I've operated on, because they have other problems with regards to the damage that vaping does to their lungs, I have to go into some education to teach them about these things. So I do think we could do better with helping the community understand what vaping actually is and what it delivers into your body.
Certainly. I mean, and obviously from an education standpoint, we could probably do a better job in schools and those health classes, really helping people to understand the way that we did with cigarettes. Like, it's funny, I've never touched a cigarette in my life, mostly because I thought we did a really great job in the 90s campaigning and understanding in the PSAs and our health classes and the DARE program of you don't want to smoke cigarettes, not worth it. So I've never touched a cigarette in my life. I've never had an interest in touching one. And I just don't think we're there yet with vaping. And those conversations should also be happening at home, right? But from a medical standpoint, Dr. Mace, what needs to also happen with the vaping industry? I know there have been efforts to try to crack down on flavors and really I would say, addictive campaigning for younger users. What would you like to see done?
Well, that's a great policy question, and I think what the smart approach is to think about risk reduction, youth protection, and accountability. We've essentially allowed a nicotine delivery system to evolve faster than our regulations, and I think what we need to do is shut down youth targeting. I think that's the biggest lever. There seems to be a fair amount that targets the youth, like we've talked about. Regulations like a drug delivery system to impact cap nicotine concentration, standardized dosing, and also require FDA-style pre-market approval for either different flavors or all devices and liquids. And there needs to be transparency between what the ingredients are as well as some safety standards. So I do think, in addition, long-term research, we're well behind with what we need to do with regards to 10 to 20-year longitudinal studies. So I do think from a policy standpoint, those are certainly some things that we can work on.
Dr. Vinnie Mace, I want to thank you so much for what you do at the Yale School of Medicine, and thank you for joining us for this conversation. We really appreciate it.